standards,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yes, I'm pretty excited to see what's going to happen with that.
Oh, here, I'm rubbing on my foot. Well, I'd like to call the Education Committee meeting to order. We're not sure how many members will be able to be here, but we've got a lot of important people in the audience that represent various groups of educators that I think that the things that you have to share are going to be very interesting and useful. I met Dr. Larson. I've actually known her for a number of years because we both serve on the Governor's Residence Council. And she introduced me. She saw me at the luncheon for the Elementary Principals Association in Minneapolis earlier this year, and introduced me to her boss, Lieutenant Colonel Link. And we got to talking about some of the things that they're doing, and I thought it would be nice to have them come, particularly when we were dealing with some of our career tech education things. But things got in such a whirl that I didn't keep my promise. And so this is an attempt to fulfill that promise of allowing them some an opportunity to share what's going on with the Army that has an impact on our elementary and secondary schools, particularly secondary school curriculum, and with some focus on career tech. So I'm just very happy to welcome Lieutenant Colonel Link and Dr. Larson here to help us. And here we've got a couple more members just right here on time. That's fine, Senator Wieger and Senator Wolf. So why don't I turn it over to you, and welcome to our committee, and we're looking forward to hearing what you have to share.
Well, ma'am, thank you very much. And to both you and your committee members, we really do appreciate the invite to be here today and talk a little bit about some concepts like the Giving Guest and how we're partnering with schools and communities all across the Upper Midwest, and particularly here in Minnesota, and also the great benefits that the U.S. Army offers in terms of education. First, I would like to just say to Senator Daley and Nienau, thank you for your service as fellow vets. I appreciate that. And I don't think – I think you just read Senator Hahn. Thank you.
Senator Hahn, I don't think is here yet. But.
Okay. Well, on the record, just want to tell him welcome home from Vietnam if you've ever been told that.
That's
so
great.
You know, Senator Olson, you mentioned that you were following up on a promise to invite us to talk to the distinguished members here, and we do appreciate that again. The desired end state is really to kind of showcase what the active duty and the reserves are providing to our United States kids across the nation. And I'll talk a little bit about the idea of being a giving guest and why I use those terms. I grew up a staunch Catholic, and I often joke about having a choice of going to church when I was a kid. I could go and not like it, or I could go in and like it either way, but I was going to go as a kid. And that Catholic upbringing really had kind of stuck with me, the idea of service and serving others and giving others who may have a better need than you or may not have the same access to resources. And so the idea of being a guest and being a giving guest in someone else's house sort of has been with me all my career. In the Upper Midwest, people are exceptionally nice to the military. They often stop and thank us, so buy us a meal. To tell us thank you for your service. But when we ask a question, have you talked to a young man or woman or your own son or daughter about joining, they often say, well, no, because they're going to go to school or they're going to do other things in life. Well, what's alarming is right now less than 4 out of 10 kids in the United States nationwide qualify for military service, primarily of 3 reasons. And this is really a national security issue in many people's minds. One, they don't have the right health and fitness background. In other words, that they're unable to pass minimum physical fitness demands. There's a growing concern over obesity, and President Obama, the First Lady, has really begun to fight this childhood obesity campaign. The second issue is they don't have the right education, so they can't pass the minimum scores to get into any of the militaries. And third, they made a bad values decision. In other words, they're in trouble with the law or moral issue, and we simply can't grant them a waiver because we do want to take the best and brightest. And so we've begun a program in the Upper Midwest called the Giving Guest, which is we want to give back to the community. We want to be on our best behavior. If anyone has kids and you go to someone else's house, you always tell them, be on your best behavior. And so we start with the idea of standards and discipline. And in my organization, Standards and disciplines start with strength and honor. Strength being how strong we're going to be as an individual, the best we can be, using an old Army term. Honor, we're going to live up to the seven Army values. And in return, the other person replies, eagle strong, because we're known as the Eagles. And together, we're going to make the organization strong. Every great organization is based upon standards and discipline, and certainly we abide by that, the seven Army values. And so this giving guest is about being on your best behavior, living up to the ideas of strength and honor and eagle strong, and then giving something of value. And what the U.S. Army does, in my estimation, better than any other organization, is plan events exceptionally well. Now, I'm a combat veteran. I've served in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and much of my focus was either stopping the enemy, killing the enemy, or protecting friendly life. Well, in the state of Minnesota and the upper Midwest, I take the protecting of lives, and really doing something to make a difference in the communities is really how I can help in this area. So this giving guest concept is about being on our best behavior and giving back. So I advocate planning events in one of five areas for the many communities: health and fitness, education, values, diversity, and then STEM or technology, science, technology, engineering, and math. The first three are really kind of focused on the reasons why less than 4 out of 10 qualify for military service right now nationwide. And the other two, diversity and technology, because those two resonate with every school district. In your handout, we began a series of health and fitness expos. And I'll just have you, that's the first thing I want to talk about. It's a series of flyers. And it just shows that the Army logo here with multiple other organizations in the community. And this is one that we're going to conduct in Harding High School later this month. And then there's two others that we talk about, Strong Healthy Students Week. These events really began as a community collaboration in terms of connecting the collective needs of the community in one of those five areas. This idea of a health and fitness expo conducted in high schools as a member of the community. The Army plans the event, but most of the credit goes to all the organizations. And what we found is these organizations within the community, from higher education, talking about the health and education programs they have at higher institution, healthcare organizations coming in to talk about the importance from a dietitian standpoint or a physical therapy standpoint, The Hy-Vee, or up here would be Cub Foods, talking about the importance of food selection and food nutrition, and then a host of others. The YMCA will partner with us, along with a yoga studio and many others. And it's all about having the discussion at the culminating point, which is in the high schools with our kids, our future. And the dynamic that happens is pretty incredible, because you see these organizations talking to kids about mental fitness, physical fitness, and emotional fitness, because they're all tied together. The Army does a great job in terms of teaching resiliency and teaching taking care of others. And so we're just applying those same lessons we've learned over years in the military now to doing these events in schools. And I have to say that someone had said, well, since you're commander recruiting battalion, obviously you want to do these events in the high schools. And my point is, it's not a recruiting event. We don't collect names. We don't collect phone numbers. We don't collect Facebook. We don't collect email accounts. That's not the reason why we're there. We're there to make a difference as part of the community. This is a culture shift in how we're conducting events from a recruiting battalion standpoint. And once we embrace this idea of being a giving guest and giving back, that you are a member of the community, and we may only be here for 2 or 3 years, but we have to make a difference, and we have to make a difference where it counts in health and fitness, education, values, diversity, and technology. So I'm excited to be here. There's a bunch of Army programs. I do want to talk a little bit about that and then open up to Dr. Larson to close this out and then ask for any questions you might have. So I mentioned the Army is very serious about education. I'm the product of the California system, and the Army helped me get a master's from Michigan and also one from Commander Jones Staff College. My mother was a teacher. My older brother and his wife are professors in Michigan. And so the idea of education is very important. The Army has a program called concurrent admissions program, where when we receive a soldier in our ranks, we normally have them from 3 to 7 months. And within 30 days, they have to join this program. It's mandated by me. And what this offers is a list of schools nationwide where they go online. It takes about 20 minutes to join this program. And all of these colleges really offer an incredible opportunity to begin a higher education. It doesn't guarantee them enrollment in the college, but it does guarantee them a step in the right direction, because education, the more education, the greater opportunity they will have in life. And so the Army takes this program very seriously. We merge a few programs together. Many of you have heard me talk about March to Success. It's a program that the Army has purchased. It's called March to Success because it actually improves test scores, not only for the entrance exam and for the ASVAB, the Army Vocation Aptitude Battery Test, or the Armed Services Vocation Aptitude Battery Test. It also has been proven to raise scores in ACT and SAT. SAT by 30 to 40 points and ACT by 3 to 4 points. That's pretty significant if you go from a 29 into the low 30s on the ACT. This program, it's free to anyone. There is no catch. There's no, you're directed to a website where you can take certain modules to help you in a variety of different areas. And it's been proven if done over an 8-week period, it will raise test scores. Normally, this program costs about $500. The Army bought the rights to this program. In fact, you're redirected to another site, not to an Army site. And it's provided free of no charge. We have school districts in both Iowa and Minnesota that are adopting this as a method of test preparation, especially in times of reduced budgetary constraints. And so March to Success to improve test scores, the Concurrent Admissions Program, or CONAP, to really push the our future soldiers a step in the right direction toward choosing a college. And then the other program called PAYS, it's Partnership for Youth Success, PAYS. This is a consortium of many different organizations that have agreed to give an interview to a soldier 6 months before their enlistment ends. And so we often start, after a future soldier joins our ranks, we start to talk to them about what do you want to do in your future. Let's say they said electrical engineering, for example, or they could say teaching. We'd say, let's pick an organization from the PAYS that will guarantee you an interview. It doesn't guarantee a job, but it certainly guarantees a foot in the door. And then whatever job you want down the road, we want you to find out what type of education you need for this job, and then join a college of your choice to help you prepare for that interview and prepare for that job. And then the March to Success program is a program which helps them raise their test scores in order to get into the college of their choice. The colleges range from a community college to an Ivy League school as well, so we kind of run the gamut there. These programs may not be well known, and the reason I'm here today is to kind of make sure it's on the record so that people do know. The propensity to normally join is low in the upper Midwest, and the likelihood that someone would join the military is only low because the number of influencers are not as readily available up here as they are down in the South, where most of the military installations are. We often call it the smile line. If you draw a line between the Sierra Nevadas, the Appalachians, that's where most of the active duty military bases are, within a 100 miles or so of that line. Smile line, it's warm weather. People are normally happier in warm weather. And it's also where many of the families have not only their immediate family, but also the extended family and the community have experienced a lot of military service. And so they start from a young age and know about this. Now, the National Guard is extremely well-known in the upper Midwest, Iowa and Minnesota, especially the Red Bulls. I helped train them before they went to Iraq years ago, so I'm very familiar with the success of that organization. Part-time state military is well-known here, and part of my job is to also advocate that there's a benefit of part-time federal service and then full-time active duty service. And then the other two areas that I focus on in terms of recruiting are warrant officer flight school and officer candidate school. There's a host of other programs. I want to show you that there's an Army Advocate Smart Book. It kind of levels the playing field of understanding what the Army has to offer. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the Army High School Program Guide. Many educators have seen this as I go around and talk to superintendents and teachers and principals about what the Army has to offer in terms of educational programs. And Dr. Larson, do you want to talk a little bit more about some of the others?
I would. First of all, I want to, again, thank Senator Olson, Chairwoman Olson, and the senators for inviting us to come and speak today, because I think we have some timely information. And if I could also thank you folks for passing the CPR initiative and getting it signed last week. Well done. I think that's an important issue for everyone in Minnesota, and as a possible someday, hopefully not recipient of CPR, I'm going to thank you. But one of the things, too, I'm so glad that you looked at it from an economic perspective. For our young people, especially those who work in the resort and hospitality service areas, the difference between being CPR certified and not can mean the difference in being hired or not. So for our young folks, that's a real critical area. And it's an area that we have some familiarity with, and I'm laughing a little bit to myself because I was sitting, Gary Amoroso sitting over there from the superintendent's organization, and I was sitting with a school superintendent in Iowa, Dr. Michich, and she said to me, the State House in Iowa has passed a CPR requirement, and they've given us no funds. They now have to be CPR certifiable, but there aren't even enough respirators in all of Iowa to meet this goal. I don't know what we're going to do. Well, I have a wonderful organization who's very good at very quickly amassing resources, and I said, well, I have an idea. Why don't you have our soldiers come out? We will train them to Red Cross standard and have them come out at no cost to any school who wants to come out, and we will, because we partner with the Red Cross. You probably know that the Army has, since 150 years, a relationship with the American Red Cross. And we partner with them where we come out and give the instruction to high school students and staff who need that. And then if they want the certificate, they pay the Red Cross for the certificate. A lot of them don't need it, but everybody needs that training. The CPR and, by the way, electric defibrillator. We do that as well. So I want to, on behalf of my leadership, make that offer to the schools of Minnesota that we would certainly step up and help you with that to meet that, because we realize that you may not have the requirement in Minnesota is a bit more realistic. Some would say modest, but realistic is maybe a good way to put it, only a half an hour. But I really think if our students are going to be economically competitive, they need to be able to have that certification or qualify for it, and we would like to partner with you at no cost to the schools to help you meet that obligation. So that's the first thing I'd like to offer about. And I want to go back and talk a little bit more about technical education, because I know that's a subject that's of interest to a lot of you. Since 1968, we've had a program called the ASVAB. And the name is both a blessing and a curse, because some people see that word, that stands for Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. And some people see the words armed services and they say, uh-oh, you're coming in, you're going to put our kid in boots and a backpack and Johnny's out the door. Not at all. This is a career exploration program. We have put it together with career experts from across the country to work with the nationally accepted career clusters to help students get a snapshot of their knowledge level at a certain point and tie that together with an interest inventory. And we come out and we test as few as 3 students, and some schools do hundreds at a time. The problem is this is very poorly utilized throughout Minnesota. This is a national resource. This is the largest the most subscribed to test in the United States. More students take this nationally normed test than any other test, more than the ACT or the SAT, and take it. But somehow in Minnesota, we still get nervous because there's that military overtone. I challenge you folks to put that aside and let us come out. Because one of the things that we look at that no other inventory looks at, We look at people's spatial abilities. We look at their technical abilities. We look at their electronic abilities. One of the great features of this is to reach out to that young person sitting in a class who says, hand me the F because school is not a good place for me. There's nothing I've ever been able to do that's shown up as much. And we can say, wow, look, you are in, out of the 500,000 students who took this, only 10% of all of those students were better in mechanical engineering, for example, or were better in electronics, were better, had more spatial knowledge. I think it's a motivator to help students explore areas. For example, STEM. When I go out and talk to young people, I'll typically have three or four young women who have really high scores in the technical and mathematical areas together with the spatial issue. And I'll say, wow, are you looking at an engineering? Are you looking at a technical area? And they'll say, oh, no, not at all. Nobody ever told me I was good at this. So I think in terms of helping us to identify STEM students, keeping students who have different intelligences that are not necessarily measured by either our standardized tests or by the ACT, I think this is really a boon in terms of motivating those students and showing them the many career options that are out there. So by all means, please, if you'd like to know more, I'd be happy to talk a bit about it. But it is free, and it is not a recruiting tool. If any of my folks come out and do an interpretation, you will not hear the word military from them. I mean, if a student wants to approach them, they can talk about that, but we really want to reach each student where they're at. So that's one important piece. And I talked a little bit about STEM. We acknowledge that and embrace that some of the most dynamic areas in job creation are going to be in the technical and scientific realms. That's true for the economy in general, and I think that's true for the military. We're going to see more and more, for lack of a better word, screen-related jobs coming up. And we need to encourage those aptitudes. And that's one of the reasons the Army has been as strong in reaching out already in the sixth grade to students. You have this information about e-cyber mission, where we help groups of students identify real-life, local, scientific, and mathematical questions and link them up with both other students and what we call ambassadors or STEM advisors across the country to compete with other groups of students, a healthy competition. But really the main thing is to get them interested. Relate these STEM issues to their everyday lives and their schools. So that's one item. Again, we don't recruit a lot of sixth graders. There aren't too many who qualify for us. So this is something we do to invest in our students. Additionally, we have things like the West Point Bridge Building Competition, which is another area that we support. And we do a lot of work with Project Lead the Way. That's another area for engineering and schools. It's another area where we're supportive. Let me circle back and talk a little bit more briefly about March to Success. And I want to show you inside your packet, there's also a brochure in Spanish. And I'm very proud of this because we've been advocating for years to get them to put this out in different languages. And Lieutenant Colonel Hink just made this possible. We had a wonderful support from the Assistant Commissioner, Alia Brueggemann, who said, boy, if I had this in Spanish, I could get this out to so many of my constituents, and Colonel Hink said, make that happen, and we did. So I want you to be aware, this program is not just a test prep program. Educational Options, who's a leading curriculum developer, would be more than happy to come out and sell you their program for thousands of dollars. And again, we have a lease on that information so that you can take English, science, and math. From the high school level, we have a high school prep. It's the fourth point here for the kid who's not only the student who's entering high school, but also the student who's at risk of failing ninth grade. There's a very nice little assessment in here, including what they know about study skills that can help put them in the right direction, and then science, math, and English. The information about the program is available in Spanish, but the program is completely in English. But there's a very nice section on flashcards math and English facts, which are absolutely super. We had a captain who was studying for his GRE, and he used the hardest flashcards, and they were very, very helpful. So this is a tool that can be used across many different areas. And I did want to say the ACT prep is Pearson's ACT prep. You can go out, you're more than welcome to go out and pay $500 for it, but we've done that for you because we want to level that playing field. We want to bridge that achievement gap. We don't want anybody to say, you know what, I live in Radium, Minnesota. I'm not going to be able to get to a test prep center, or my parents didn't have enough money to supply me with this. If you've got an internet connection 24/7, you can get to it, even from your phone. So there's really no reason why both students and parents shouldn't be aware of this resource. It costs, on a federal level, millions of dollars a year to renew that lease every year, but we think it's worthwhile. We want to make it worthwhile in Minnesota and have our young people sign up for that as well. And finally, I'd like to talk just a little bit about a difference that the Colonel is making, and I wanted to address an issue that Senator Kruf was talking about with veterans. We want the folks who come in from Minnesota to come home to Minnesota, and they do that, actually. Even with the active Army, we've got about 70% of the people who go in from Minnesota come back to Minnesota, and that's actually unique. In Indiana, they tend to like to stay in Texas or other warmer places, but there's something about Minnesota that brings us home. And you'll notice in CONEP, if you look at the Minnesota schools, we have quite a good number. We'd love to see the University of Minnesota be one of those servicemen's opportunity colleges, but we've had some difficulties getting them to agree to the terms, but we'd love to have them as well. But all of the MinSCU schools, for example, are supportive, and we appreciate that. But our Colonel has made a real concerted effort. He talked about CONAP, and he talked about PAYS. And the other piece goes together with the selection of their job in the Army or their military occupation specialty, MOS. Those pieces together are a triangle that support education and support success. We will hear soldiers say, you know, I'm coming into the Army because I don't want any education. I'm done. I'm finished. And we're like, got it, soldier. But we can see further down the road. We know that to be successful in life and in the military, you will need a college education, a post-secondary education to do well. And because we have that perspective and because we believe in deeds, not words, we actually go out and make sure that that young person, in the 6 months that we have them, starts that process of blueprinting their future for success. And I come back to what does that mean in terms of our veterans. Statistics from last month tell us that if Iraq and Afghanistan-era veterans with a high school degree had a 16.4 unemployment rate in the past year, if they had part of a college education, that went down to 13.4, but an associate degree was 11.9. But this is what I want you to take away. With a full college education, the rate was 6.3%. It's absolutely essential. And we need to get them thinking about it while they're young. A lot of young folks, bless their hearts, long-term planning is what am I going to do Saturday night. But we have a unique window to influence them and also to show parents that we have a focus on education. So let us serve you. Let us help you with our resources. Only 1% of high school students join the military. If we're doing this on the numbers, schools would not be where we put our focus. But the Army continues to be the branch that does so to the highest degree because we want all young people to be successful. So please, if there's anything that we can help you with, let us know. Sir?
Thank you, Dr. Larson. Ma'am, and to the committee, we'd like to entertain any questions or comments, please.
Great. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for your service, and thank you for sharing with us all of the ways that you're engaging our youth, particularly in advancing their education and training, which is so important. And Dr. Larson, you referenced the book that I was looking at, which is the CONAP, Concurrent Admissions Programs, and I did notice that the U of M wasn't listed on here. And I would like to, I don't know if you're at liberty to talk about what might help that occur. And then my other question was, you mentioned that all the MinSCU colleges are participating. I don't see that on here, but is that correct? Are all of our Minsky colleges participating in the CONAP program?
Dr. Larson.
Yes, Senator. Per Steve France, the Vice President of Minsky, all of them are participating in the program. The folder only gets updated every so often.
Okay.
So this also reflects work that the battalion has done within the last year to make sure Winona State, for example, was absent and now are present. And I want to thank the folks at Minsky for all that they do for all of our service members to make that transition to civilian life again. And I would be more than delighted to speak with any of you here or at a later time about how we can work with the University of Minnesota to get them to come online with the servicemen's opportunity colleges. That's a necessary membership then to belonging to the CONAP program, because I think it would be a wonderful mm-hmm. incentive for those young people who want to go to a first-rate university and want to serve their country at the same time.
Thank you. And just to follow up.
Senator Nelson.
One of the things that I had pursued in the jobs committee had to do with this high unemployment rate of our veterans.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm thinking maybe this CONAP program is helpful in that regard. But the idea being that our veterans are trained in so well, and when they come back, how sad it is that they're not given higher education credit for those particular skills that they've already been trained for, well trained for, in the field. And I was exploring with the gentleman from Minsky about somehow taking your MOS and somehow transitioning that into higher education credits. And I would just like your perspective on where we are in that process. What could we do to help our veterans come back and get higher education credit for those skills that they've already been trained in?
Well, first of all, thank you for your question, and I want to, again, I have to say, here Minnesota is a leader, not a follower. Dr. France and his colleagues at the VA Higher Education Commission have put together exactly what you've asked for. They put together a search engine that will go through all of the Minsky campuses. They take it a step further than the COOL system, which will show you what type of majors your training might qualify for. They have, because of the funding that you provided them, they have been able to actually have a person put in their Army job, their MOS, the level of skill, 1, 2, or 3, that they're trained at, and not only show you the major, but what campus will give you the most credit for each area. So they've got the ball. They need encouragement. This doesn't run on itself because they have to go through and analyze it for each particular job, each MOS. They started with law enforcement. They're going into medicine, but it's an ongoing issue. And I urge you to look at mymilitaryeducation.org. I was just invited to attend a committee for military educators through the South, and I showed them what had been done with Minnesota tax money, and nobody could touch it. We have counselors who work with the VA to work with veterans. We have, I believe, 11 staff folks who will answer questions from anywhere. You can call them from Fort Hood or Afghanistan, and they will help you work on those issues. Additionally, we have a wonderful resource. My colleague in the reserves, Mrs. Brenda McCrory, is a national expert on this subject, and I'd be more than happy to connect you with her. She speaks for Department of Army at different areas about tuition assistance and getting veterans to use this. But I do want to say, because I'm very passionate about education and veterans education, we talk about the 1944 GI Bill as being one of the greatest transformations in American education, really redefining who could be a college student, right? You no longer had to be urban, middle class, white, or even male. My great aunt from Sibley, Iowa, went to school on the World War II GI Bill and became a teacher with that money. The post 9/11 GI Bill has the possibility to be even more transformational. It's a complicated bill, but one of the pieces I find really inspiring that says that if you served since 9/11 and you've served for 10 years, we will let you transfer a 4-year education at the institution of your choice up to the highest in-state tuition allowed by your state. Transfer that to your children or to your spouse. And we will give you a living allowance while you're at school. Because we acknowledge that not only...
Tax-free.
Not only service members serve, but their families serve as well. And children and spouses are especially impacted by that. So that's one of, I think that's the second wave of transformation that we're going to see with the post 9/11 GI Bill. And that's open to service members from every branch.
Great.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you very much. I think you've opened a lot of eyes and appreciate very much that you're sharing all of this with us.
Thank you for having us.
Because I think most of the people here talk to other people, and hopefully that this we don't always know what's available, and it's no sense to rediscovering America if we can use what's already here and build on it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man. Just a couple closing comments. You know, the Army always assigns people a mission, and of course, my mission as a commander is to put people in the Army in specific categories, and of course, I take that very seriously. And we're doing well. The recruiting command will meet their mission again this fiscal year, but more importantly, as a leader, as a citizen, I think it's my obligation to make a difference in many of the communities, and that's why the giving guest approach. Is just so powerful. Many other folks are coming on board. Dr. Verna Price at U of M has lent her voice to our mission here, as well as several other people. And so Deborah Younger from the local community and many others. So I just want to say thank you for your time here. We really do think that we're making a difference, not just by putting people in the ranks, the United States Army, which I obviously believe very strongly in, but also in several of the communities in the Upper Midwest. Again, thanks for your time.
Great. Well, thank you. Senator Rieger.
Yes, I had one quick question. Do you know how many persons after their service become teachers in public or private schools?
I would love to get back to you. We have a whole program called Troops to Teachers, and I will follow up on that question for you, Senator.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
I have a fun question because I might have trouble meeting these standards now, but I'm just looking at your physical fitness standards, and that you have a male has to do 3 push-ups or 13 push-ups in a minute, and a female 3. And I always see those movies where they say drop and give me 40, and I'm just wondering, do people have trouble meeting those standards?
No, actually, we certify that they can meet the minimum standards before going off to basic training.
Before
and that's why the idea of health and fitness expos are so important to help kind of increase that physical ability.
Well, women have equal rights. Shouldn't they have to do 13 also?
Senator Tomasoni, quit while you're ahead. So, if there are no further questions, thank you very much. I know there not everybody is here, and there may be some people in the audience that might like to have one of your packets. If there are ones that are on the, we're not going to throw them away. So if there's any that you want to share or that are at an empty spot, we'll be happy to share them with any of you that are in the audience. So thank you again.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stump.
I just want to extend my gratitude, too. And as you were talking about the CPR training program, I saw some heads nodding over there. So I think that's one way that many of our schools are going to be helped or should become involved. And we appreciate your volunteering or participation. So thank you.
So the word has been leaked now.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. We have just a few minutes here before adjournment. Senator Daley has, I think, recently introduced a bill relating to education, and we just wanted to have a few minutes for you to tell about it, because obviously nothing's going to happen this year, but get the idea out there.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just wanted to bring to everyone's attention and to begin the dialogue about the Military Interstate Children's Compact. It brings together both Colonel Hank and Dr. Larson and the efforts that they're making. And I'd like to raise awareness, for all of the leaders in our state, whether they're legislators, whether they're school board members, principals, superintendents, the governor, Minnesota Department of Education, military leaders, military families, the parents, and most importantly, the children. This is about our students in military families. And there are 1.5 million military member students throughout our nation. And here in Minnesota, we have between 600 and 700. And they're moving maybe 6 to 10 times while they're in school throughout the years. And there is an interstate compact that was first signed by the state of Kansas. Kathleen Sebelius was the then governor of Kansas on April 9th, 2008. She signed that. And the next day, the governor of Kentucky signed it. So those were the first two states. That was a little over 4 years ago. Now, fast forward to 2012, state number 40 signed the compact in February, 41 in March, and Georgia just signed the compact, the 42nd state in the nation to sign it, signed it last week. So while Minnesota is a leader in so many things with education and with support of military families, this is an opportunity that's out there for us to be part of the 50 that hopefully ultimately sign this. And I just want to begin the dialogue, raise awareness, figure out what it is is the difference between what's in the compact and what we're doing as a state, and try to figure out what we can do to move it forward. And there are a couple of stories that I want to share that really highlight the importance and the need, and these families weren't able to make it here today. But this, the first one is children of an officer in the Air Force. Due to multiple reassignments for our family, my son attended 10 different schools prior to graduating from high school. Though he was certified as academically advanced by previous school systems, he was denied advanced placement in one school system solely because he was not in that system for the required period of time. He was denied advanced placement in another system due to its different qualifying criteria as compared to previous jurisdictions. For 1 4-year period, during which we were reassigned each year, my son was required to read Romeo and Juliet for each of those 4 years, despite having done so in each preceding state. He was denied the opportunity to participate in sports on more than one occasion because we were reassigned after team tryouts, and he was told he was too late. Finally, we had to take the drastic measure of placing him in a private school after one reassignment because in order for him to graduate on time from his assigned public school, he would have been required to stay in school for an extra year since the new school system refused to accept all of his credits that he had completed in the previous jurisdiction. That's just his son. Now, his daughter was a freshman at the time. She had attended 7 different schools. She had an IEP, a special education, individual education plan, from one state that was not continued in the next state because her success outscored their expectation of what her aptitude score indicated she could achieve. In our current state of residence, she was required to pass 6 course competency tests, even though she took some of those courses in a different state. Furthermore, the prep curriculum for these tests is different than in the last jurisdiction, so her burden has needlessly increased. What is most problematic is that in order for her to graduate high school on time, she must pass an exit exam, which is designed for students who have been in this particular state system for 12 years. For that reason, and because previously earned credits have not been accepted by the present jurisdiction, she must take summer school courses every summer for the next 3 years. So sometimes the students are getting caught up in some of these systems, processes that we put in place for very good reasons. But the compact helps alleviate some of those challenges that are the children of our service members who are already under immense stress because their parent is deployed in Iraq or Afghanistan. They're already going through so much. And they've moved from one state to another state, adding to that, and now they have these additional burdens placed on them. It's really stressful and challenging for our military service members and their children. So we've missed deadlines to do this session. I just want to begin the dialogue, raise awareness, and start to think about perhaps getting Minnesota into that compact into the future. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Now, we also have Hector Garcia is here, and he would like to have a few words about the Army's work with your minority councils. Just grab an extra chair, and you can stay there, too. So,
come on up.
It grows between two thorns here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I apologize for my voice. I lost it a couple of days ago, but hopefully I'll be clear. My name is Hector Garcia. I'm the executive director of the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, one of the state councils of the minorities and Indian Affairs Council. I wanted to speak to express my appreciation for Commander Hinks and Dr. Anderson's program. We have been working together for quite some time with support of Secretary Mark Ritchie and at his suggestion, actually. I praise the work that they're doing for two reasons. One, because on its own merit, I think it will produce great results. The second reason is that I have heard and read comments made in the Senate last week expressing perplexity over the fact that the councils don't seem to be making much headway with the disparities. And I want to point out it is very important that the type of communication that Commander Hink and Dr. Anderson
Larson.
I'm sorry?
Larson.
I apologize. Dr. Larson have used in communicating with us is what will make it succeed. And I have tried to convey to the legislature since I've been in this position for 2 years that it is the way in we are miscommunicating that is preventing the councils from having an impact on the disparities that worries everybody, because they've lasted for, as you well know, over 40 years. So there's no reason why we cannot have a very significant impact on all the disparities if the approach that Dr. Larson and Commander Hink have utilized in communicating with us. It's not for lack of effort. It's not for lack of money. It's not for lack of goodwill. It is simply because the method is dysfunctional. And until we change that, the results will never change, no matter how much money, no matter how much time passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And a nice commendation to our folks from the Army. Thank you very much for that. Is there any other questions? If not, I think we're just about on time, maybe a few minutes over. I will thank you.
I'm sure. Is this our last meeting?
I never say never. So who knows? We don't know how long we're going to carry on, and we might get another brainy idea that is something that we want to do. But the last one was, I think, the last, and this one maybe the last. So.
Madam Chair, before you bang that gavel, then, might I say a word? Just in case it does happen to be our last meeting, I want to thank you for your leadership in education throughout this state for decades, many, many decades before I ever came to the Capitol. You were well known as an educator who was very convicted and dedicated to doing what was best for children. And I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for your leadership here on the Education Committee and for doing what's best for kids for all these years.
Thank you, and don't make me cry. it's been a joy working with all of you and having this opportunity. So thank you.
Madam Chair, we all feel that, and I've served with you for 16 years, and I'm going to miss you. I know you'll be back in some capacity.
Thank you. Probably not a lobbyist, however.
It's their loss.
Never say never. Never say never.
I said probably not because one has to be aware of saying never because